This is The Big Web Show, a live talk show about the web and the future of web publishing, hosted by Jeffrey Zeldman and Dan Benjamin. That's me. The Big Web Show is sponsored by MailChimp, powerful email marketing. MailChimp serves more than 300,000 users and 20 million emails daily, and their template language makes it dead simple to code HTML email templates that give your clients the ability to adjust colors, fonts, and more without breaking layout or having to mess with your code. Sign up free and see why everyone's switching to MailChimp. Check them out at MailChimp.com. Hey, Jeffrey.
How you doing, Dan?
Doing well, and we have an excellent, amazing guest today who perhaps you could introduce.
I would be happy to. Frankly, if I introduce Liz, it could take the rest of the show. Her bio is everyone I know who knows Liz, which is everyone. Everyone in the field pretty much knows Liz, has worked with her in some capacity. Feels like a slacker. By comparison, Liz Danzico is an independent consultant. She's an active user experience designer and consultant. She's an active columnist and editor. She is serves an advisory capacity to a leading user experience publishing house. And in her spare time, she runs. She's the chairperson and co-founder with Stephen Hiller of the MFA in Interaction Design program at New York's School of Visual Arts, a very small, elite, elite in the sense that, you know, it's got some really good teachers and some really good students. Program in New York that's amazing and one of the first and only of its kind. Obviously, there are web design programs and there are interaction design programs, but nothing quite like this. And, I'm sure we'll get into that. But she's also a columnist for Interactions Magazine. She was the editor of Boxes and Arrows, the director of experience strategy at AIGA, which she followed by being the chairperson of AIGA New York, I believe.
Don't forget Bobulate.com.
Bobulate.com, author of Bobulate.com, former IA director at Barnes & Noble, and product developer at Daylife. I'm going to stop because it's just getting ridiculous. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You started an MFA in Interaction Design program at School of Visual Arts. Why did you start an Interaction Design program at the MFA level? What was missing out there?
So I started it at the master's level because there is a program here at SVA that that focuses on design, and that's run by Steve Hiller. And Steve Hiller, in that program, actually found that his students were wanting to do sort of interaction design work, and in that program, they weren't. Either sort of having the training or having the time to do it sort of correctly. They weren't being trained that way. They weren't, the program isn't set up for that. And on the inverse side, when they were going out into the field, they weren't having the opportunity to find candidates that were being, that had interaction design expertise. And so when Steve and colleagues were sort of trying to find people to hire that had the right skill sets in interaction design, they couldn't find appropriate candidates here in New York and beyond. So when Steve approached me at the end of 2006, he asked me if I would create a program that, broadly focused on digital design, interaction design, web design. He wasn't quite sure. He sort of named a lot of different skill sets. And we set out together to put together a proposal to look at both interaction design, web design, areas in entrepreneurial design and business, and a number of other things. Because of a lack at the School of Visual Arts specifically, also in New York, both in the education side and also on the hiring side. So it wasn't a lack of a program specifically. It didn't grow out of a program here at the School of Visual Arts. It was actually a brand new program here, and it was a lack in the industry itself that we saw. and Steve specifically. So Steve is actually the co-founder, and the proposal for the program was done by me with his guidance and approved, developed by me in 2007 and approved that year, and kind of fully came to bear at the beginning of 2008.
For a lot of graphic designers know who Stephen Heller is, but some of our audience might not know. So,
yeah,
again, someone who's kind of impossible to summarize. But if you wouldn't mind, just a sentence or two about the author of 5,000 books a week or something.
I'm like looking up at my bookshelf. There's like a zillion books by Steve. So Stephen Heller is right. He's the author, I think, at this point of 110 books, literally 110 books. And he is, I think
only 109 of them are good, though.
I know. Yeah, there's that one that's a thorn in his side, right? But he for many years was at the New York Times, running the book review there, and he was. Is still an active part of the New York Times. He is kind of like a design historian, design critic, and a design writer. He's still a columnist at the Times. So he does a lot of design writing, and he is the co-chair of the MFA in Design program here at the School of Visual Arts, or the Designer's Author program. And so he's pretty... pretty active in sort of design writing, design criticism, and you'll see his name sort of attached to a lot of design writing.
And School of Visual Arts is very practice focused, I would say. It's very it's taught by people in the field, right? Your professors, your staff, you didn't go for professional educators, right? You found people who are working 9 to 5 or 9 to 9 as user experience designers and graphic designers and product designers, things like that, and what? I mean, that's who's at right. the school.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah. Are you going to ask a question? Should I wait for that?
I like, who you got?
Yeah, well, we got you. So that's a good example. You are a good example of the kind of practitioner that the School of Visual Arts would bring in. So since its founding over 60 years ago, it's actually had this tradition of bringing in practitioners who by day are doing their art or design work, and by night or by day, depending on how they work, teaching what they do or what they practice. So it is very much this tradition since its very beginning of sort of practicing what they preach, so to speak. So it is, in its very beginning, it was founded by two individuals, Silas Rhodes and Bern Hogarth, who, with a few faculty members from its very start, had this tradition of learning by doing. And so they're very faculty practice this idea. And so there are a few full-time faculty members, but it's by and large over 900 faculty members come in after they practice and keep this tradition of very kind of practical and real ways of kind of working from the field to the students directly. So this line between the street and academia, or profession and academia, is very much blurred. It's very much, one that people don't see. And so there is this very kind of invisible line between what's outside and what's inside, both in terms of the projects and the curriculum and the ways that students work. And I like to think that the curriculum that we have is very much tied to the way that we work outside.
Absolutely. I knew about School of Visual Arts first. I moved here because a girlfriend was going into the computer graphics program, which was one of the first in the country. Later, I had a girlfriend in a painting program. Later, I worked for a guy who's a legendary teacher in the advertising program. And I had a friend, an art director, who lost his job. And I saw him a few months later. I said, "Jerry, you look really happy. What's going on?" He said, "Have you found a job?" He said, "Oh, no, I'm not looking for a job." He said, "I got into Sal DeVito's class at SVA." And I was like, I couldn't figure out why he was happy. I was like... he was married and he had expenses, but he was right. 2 years later, he's this amazing award winner. His career shot through the roof, and And, you know, Sal DeVito, I think as a teacher, basically would take your portfolio, break it over his leg, throw it in the garbage. If you didn't like that, you could leave. But if you wanted to learn advertising for real, you kind of had to start over. And I don't believe you have your teachers are as aggressive as that. But I do think, and I'm certainly not, but there's a real hardcore people who are great at the field teaching aspect to the school that's unusual, right? A lot of times people can be a great teacher and a pretty good practitioner, and so they become, you know, they focus on teaching. Whereas I think School of Visual Arts is unusual, and your program's unusual in that even though the people you've hired love teaching, they're really practitioners. They're really like, none of them are going to, they're all going to die at their desks. You know what I mean? Like, I don't plan to retire ever. Nobody I know. None of your teachers, I just can't see any of them like cashing out on the, you know, and moving on with their lives. I think they're going to be working on the day they die.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really interesting. You know, they say if you want someone to do something, you ask like the busiest person, you know, and it's so interesting. That's my version of the quote. That's not the exact word. If you want to get something done, you ask the busiest person you know, right? And it's so interesting that the people that are teaching in this program and in the programs here, the design program has, you know, Paula Scher and Michael Beirut and all of these, Stefan Sagmeister, and, you know, sort of all the great graphic designers, the busiest graphic designers that we know. But they are teaching in this school for, you know, decades at this point. And it's true. You know, they have the same deadlines that everyone has and more, the same speaking engagements that everyone has and more, and interviews and so on. But they will sort of be tied to their desks or their engagements or whatever it is, because they love so passionately what they do, and teaching is part of that, or passing on the sort of passion and the unbridled, you know, sort of pure sort of emotion for what they do. And so much so that they need to kind of pass it on to more people. But that doesn't mean that they're easy on students by any means. Certainly, I don't know if people are breaking portfolios over their knee per se in this program, but I've certainly seen a lot of tough teachers for sure. Lots of late nights.
But for our listeners and viewers who may be thinking this is an HTML focused program, let's be clear that it's not. Would you say it's kind of an agnostic interaction design program or a multimedia? You know, it's not specific to touchscreen or the web or phones or products. It's just how people interact with things and devices, and it's all of that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So it can be a web design program for someone who wants it to be that, but it really is, you know, media agnostic in that we're focusing particularly in the first year on the concepts and methods of interaction design, so that students can come in if they're very excited about web, or if they're very excited about mobile, or if they're very excited about, you know, sort of digital design in public spaces or whatever it might be, or something completely different, they can then sort of take all the classes and look at it through that lens. And so it is completely media agnostic, with the exception of a couple of classes that ask them to prototype things using a specific technology. So it is very much focusing on interaction design as it exists between, you know, people and the objects that they use, looking at usability, sort of cognitive psychology, human factors, and all of those things, and how they would affect whatever kind of media people can encounter. And so certainly web design is a large part of that, but it's not. It's just one kind of aspect.
Do you have guest lecturers as well?
We have many. We are like incredibly fortunate to have so many guest lecturers. We had, I would venture to say that we had too many guest lecturers this past year. the sort of an embarrassment of riches of guest lectures, which is good. I can say that we have two different lecture series. We have a small program just to set it up for people who aren't familiar with the program. Here, our interaction design program is one of, as you mentioned, many. There are a few different interaction design programs around the country. Some are in smaller cities, and ours just happens to be in New York City, where a lot of people will pass through. So I try to take advantage of that location, and when people are passing through, or even if they're not, I will grab their attention and try to encourage them to educate our students or become part of the community here. So we have two lecture series to supplement the curriculum that we have. So, you know, we have 15 students and they can only take so many classes. And so the idea is to introduce students to as many different types of interaction design topics as we can. You know, interaction design goes well beyond, as you said, the screen. You can think about interaction design as, you know, cooking, sewing, business. You can look at it in sort of, as I say a lot, you know, kind of outdoors and getting in touch with, like, you know, nature and like the woods and farming, and you can see it in all different kinds of things. So I introduce all kinds of people to interaction design in the lecture series. So we have two, one in the department and one in that larger public space, which is a bar in Brooklyn in Dumbo. And we did have almost one a week for the entire year. And so we had nearly 30 guest lectures throughout the course of the year, as well as hands-on workshops where people had the opportunity to make things over the course of a weekend or a week. And it was quite a lot. The students and the public intermingled together to get a broader sense of interaction design that was outside the scope of the curriculum. And I think that's critical. I don't think that they should be limited to something that's just within the scope of the curriculum.
Liz, I have a question for you coming in from the chat room. They're saying, can you talk about the curriculum that you actually use, specifically speaking to things like books or resources for students? And they say, as a follow-up, they know there are many, many books on web design, but not many that are geared towards somebody who's brand new at this. Many are focused on getting people to use standards and things like that. So, you know, is that something you can talk about? Are you involved in creating that aspect of it?
Sure. So the first question was, what does, I'm looking at the chat room
yeah.
now too.
Can you speak to what kind of curriculum is used, you know, books yeah. specifically?
Sure. So we have a curriculum that is 5 classes per semester. And so over the course of the 2 years, it'll take approximately, you know, actually, it's about 21 or so, 24 classes. And those classes in the first year focus on the concepts and methods of interaction design. And in the second year, they're really in support of what is a year-long thesis project. And I want to be clear that this is our interaction design program. It's not interaction design programs at large. There are other programs. I think that some programs have a shorter thesis project that's focused on one semester, and some are just as long. So, but I think that that's sort of like breakdown between looking at the building blocks and then applying it to a larger project is pretty typical. What the curriculum contains are basically breaks down to 4 themes: people and human behavior, information and systems. we have business, for lack of a more interesting term, and design. So those tracks or those themes are all required. Everyone has to take all the classes within all those themes. But if someone is very interested in entrepreneurship or understanding how to sort of create a business throughout the program, they can really specifically think about the program through the lens of the business theme and think about entrepreneurial design, strategic innovation and product and service design, and design management, and so on. And so all the classes within that kind of track or theme are concentrated throughout the curriculum. So the information systems has, you know, courses like information visualization, data visualization, and so on, that cybernetics, and that get people thinking about systems design and how to think about information in terms of systems and looking for information that way. So that's how I would describe the kind of higher level structure of the curriculum. All of the classes down to sort of at a higher level, who's teaching them, and even the entire syllabus for all of the classes are all online. So I can send out, you can find them through the website, the Interaction Design SVA website, and I can then send out the links to the individual syllabus and the class websites after this. One of them is password protected, so I can't reveal that, but all of the rest of it is all online and all open, so you can kind of look through like the class assignments and all the information, and I'd be happy to do that. Who created that? WordPress created the open framework that allowed us to make that possible, and through their MU sort of platform. And then Paul Ford, boy, man, genius, Paul Ford, actually coded it. And then because it's so simple, all the instructors put all their information online. So, Jeffrey, you will too. Every instructor
I didn't get the email.
No, I'm just kidding. Every instructor has a TA, and then so all the TAs put all the information online. So it's already kind of a setup for everyone to do so. But we're really interested in kind of documenting all the information that happens in class. So all the classes that have Flickr, you know, we put everything on Flickr. We document all the everything that's happening in the courses. All the projects get documented, and then sort of everything goes online in all these class websites.
Are you archiving it as well, so that someday, 10, 20 years from now, people will be able to walk through, you know, the first year of projects or like that?
Yeah, you know, we're just thinking about that now in terms of like how to, you know, the sort of like full archival structure and what we're going to do now that we're moving into the second year. Yes, we're thinking about that and how that exactly is going to work. I don't quite know yet, but we're absolutely thinking about that because that is the goal.
How much influence, if any, do you get from other programs that have been around longer? So are you able to go to the chairs of, say, the graphic design program or advertising or filmmaking or computer graphics and say, hey, how have you dealt with this kind of thing before? How do we archive? How do we store projects? How do we vet future teachers? That kind of thing.
You know, that's a really good question. I am getting a lot of inspiration from Richard Wild, who has run the graphic design and advertising undergraduate program for a little over 40 years, or just about 40 years here. Wow. He is an incredible presence and has influenced the lives of great designers everywhere. He has amazing insights in terms of how to understand faculty, how to choose the right people, both students, faculty. You know, he is just this amazing, insightful person. So I've gained a lot of inspiration from him. It's incredible. If you ever have the opportunity to meet him, go out of your way to find him and ask him as many questions as you can. Richard Wild. That's advice for everyone.
Okay.
So Richard Wild has been incredibly inspirational. In terms of people and how to set up and archive projects and think about them, There's another interaction design school in Copenhagen named the Copenhagen Institute of Interaction Design. And they have been incredibly helpful in helping me think about structuring the program, thinking about archiving projects, interviewing students, and so on. And we've had several Skype calls to, and in-person meetings actually to talk about exactly that. So they've been really generous. Also, there's a woman in at the Art Center in Pasadena who's also been incredibly helpful in helping me think through these things. So I have mentors sort of like all around the world. At SVA here, it's more about people. They're not they're more about people than about sort of archiving. Yeah.
Sure. That's great. Now, it's 15 people right now, right? 15 students. Walk me through the process. If I've been accepted into the school, what would I be going just at night? Is it 3 nights a week? How long are the nights? What, and more importantly, what kind of work would I expect to do? Is there a lot of teamwork? Or is it all solo projects?
Yeah.
How much of it's guided by the student? I can just keep asking questions, but you can pick any of those and answer them.
You know, so two things. One, I just did a workshop at UX London on interviewing techniques. So I'm like, I'm meta analyzing your interviewing techniques.
She claims to have done that to me also. So I think it's okay. It's a little unnerving, perhaps, but I think we can deal with it.
I see that someone's asking about the URL for the program. So I just wanted to, before I answer those questions, I just wanted to ask, someone just posted the right link. Okay. So it's interactiondesign.sva.edu. So to answer your question.
And the hashtag is IXD?
What is it? It's a SVA IXD. MFA, I think it's hard to say these things verbally.
I know. Yeah, and it sounds dirty too.
It does. They should never be spoken out loud.
It's a program that must not be named.
That's right. So the structure is all at night. I planned it like what I thought school should be, right? Paul Graham, you know, has this great essay, and I can't remember what it's called, but because we shouldn't say those things out loud either, we should just link to them. But he has this great essay on startups, where he talks about one of the problems with defining your job as a startup, and he talks about you know, we sort of think about them in terms of old definitions, and that's why we can never really kind of understand our jobs correctly. And when I put together the curriculum, I put together it based on what my definition of school was, which is school happens during the day, right? People go to school during the day, and
right.
And so I had structured the entire program that way. And when I positioned this and had my first open house, like 90-some people showed up or 100 people showed up, and we all got into a room, and everyone, I don't remember if you were there or not, but everyone kind of revolted. There was this like massive revolt, and everyone was like, you know, this program is for working professionals and we all have jobs, and I don't even understand how we could possibly, you want us to work and go to school during the day. It just doesn't even make sense. And it never occurred to me that if my audience is working professionals, then of course they can't go to school during the day. So, but my definition of school was day. So in any case, the, structure of the curriculum is, such that all of the classes take place at night, with the exception of a couple classes that just can't fit at night. Classes start at 6 and end at 9. One night a week is off, and sometimes two. There are a couple workshops that take place during the day, and they're short semesters. So they start in September and end pretty early in December, and then the year is up in April.
So it's kind of like Project Runway. And have there been any suicides or relationships or flameouts or anything juicy? No names, please.
There may have been.
Ah.
There may have been.
You're very discreet.
We've got another question here. I want to just jump in and ask, because this one is one that they're talking about a lot in the chat room. I think it's Luke who's asking this. I would like to know how Liz is seeing educators in universities and things like that, as opposed to what you're putting together. In other words, he's found that most teachers were outdated and went to teach because they couldn't find a job in the industry, or perhaps they did it and then they left and they're outdated. I mean, obviously you're focusing on, you know, stuff that's really modern and up to date with what you're doing, but how do you feel that the more traditional system is handling these kinds of topics?
The topic of being out of date.
Exactly.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, ITP handles it pretty well. ITP is the Interactive Telecommunications Program at NYU, the New York University, here in New York, just as one example. ITP has a rotating, they have one model where they have a full-time faculty, and staff. And then they also have this large body of kind of rotating faculty as well.
Right.
So they constantly are refreshing their curriculum, the offering, the electives they have. But then at the same time, they also have this sort of base level of required courses that people can count on. And required, and also kind of like stalwart set of people that you can count on as well. I think that's really smart, although, you know, that too can cause problems in that, you know, if you were hoping to have X person and X person is only there once or only once in a while, then that can cause problems. But I think that that's a smart model and a way to keep the staff, faculty, and set of topics that you cover fresh and current. So I like that as one model. And I don't think that that's necessarily terribly innovative, but that is one model. Copenhagen Institute of Interaction Design, which I mentioned and someone just posted the link to, by the way, if anybody's looking at the chat stuff going on. What they do is they have these, I can't remember the name of them, but they have these like 2-week sprints. So they bring in, in the same way that we do workshops and lectures, they bring in like experts from the field. Like they had the guys from Berg, London, Matt Jones and Schultz and Webb, formerly Schultz and Webb, come over and do like a really brief, and actually among others, do a brief sprint. So they bring in professional expertise. Do a sprint for 2 weeks and then leave. So you're having these like very direct professional sprints for a short period of time and then get out. and then they have their full-time staff as well that are sort of there all the time. I keep calling them staff. There's faculty. So I think that's a really nice model, right? It mixes full-time faculty and professionals at the same time. But then there's completely new models, right? There's the Salman Khan Academy. It's like not what you're asking about, but do you know about the Khan Academy?
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
Is Salman Khan or Sal Khan is what is he? He was a former hedge fund. I can't believe I'm talking about this in the same sentence as I'm talking about these other things, but it's really interesting. I mean, this has nothing to do with design education whatsoever, although who knows, he may move into design, but he's been doing these, they're like 10 minute web Blackboard sprints, right? Where he's a former hedge fund guy, and don't hold that necessarily against him, but he's been teaching.
I hear he was with hedge funds. Was he with hedge funds? So he's a hedge fund guy.
Yeah, he's been teaching math, right? Okay. And he teaches math 10 minutes at a time. He starts with things like percentages and very long division and so on, and he teaches them for, I don't know, like 10 minutes at a time, and he posts these things in this giant web page. It's just like this long web page, but the idea is that after 10 minutes, and this has been proven actually through research, your sort of ability to comprehend and retain information goes down. So he keeps them at sort of 10 minutes and posts all these things online. So the Khan Academy is this other kind of model whereby instead of changing people, you change concepts, right? And you sort of post these things just one at a time. I don't know. So it's sort of an interesting model that's been getting some attention as of late. Salman Khan.
Liz, another question coming in from the chat room. Sorry, Jeffrey. What do you expect students to already know who apply to your program?
Yep.
The person here says that she teaches an undergraduate class about tech social issues and designing for new media. And she's just curious, how could she best prepare them to apply for these programs?
Yeah.
And another question, how would you actually go about trying to get into the program? What's the acceptance rate? So there's a few questions for you.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. I think it's like taking notes. so, I'm just sketching some architecture. So the I typically say that, you know, what I look for in a candidate, and I think what I can't speak for everyone. Again, this is specific to our program, but maybe it is probably, you know, true for a lot of people, is people that are really curious about the human condition, right? People that are really curious about human behavior and how human behavior connects to design. And there are also people who are really sort of curious about, you know, how not just thinking about design, but actually making things. So they can't be too disconnected from design such that they're only interested in design research or design strategy, but they're really sort of interested in like rolling up their sleeves or down their sleeves or however they want to do it, and interested in like getting involved in some aspect of making things, whether that be, you know, whatever that craft may be, whatever kind of making is involved. It could be code, it could be physical computing, it could be whatever kind of craft. But the person typically has like this great ability to straddle both this very abstract way of thinking and has like their feet on the ground. So they are really good at sort of abstract thought and critical thinking, but they're tinkering in something like pulling apart motorcycles or like building some strange art project or just some sort of like taking something apart. So it's that kind of thing. I typically ask people when they're putting together a portfolio, which we do require now, but I'm actually changing that for the upcoming class, and I'll talk about that in a second. No matter what their background is, whether they're a writer, whether they have a science background, whatever their background is, I want them to be able to answer two questions with this portfolio of stuff, you know, whether it's writing or art or design or whatever it is. How have the things in this portfolio kind of affected people, and then in turn, how have people affected the work in the portfolio? And you know, you can make that sentence or that those questions fancier. You know, you ask them in different ways. But basically, those are the questions I'm after. You know, you can ask those questions as they relate to objects, as they relate to posters, as they relate to websites, as they relate to, you know, very complex kinds of interfaces and objects. But those are the two questions I'm after. And if people are insightful, they can really think about, you know, anything as it sort of relates to those. And if they can get at the answers to those are the people that I'm really kind of interested in. So as an instructor, how can one prepare people for the program? Or for this kind of education, not this program, but this kind of education. It's really through sort of like a pursuit of that kind of thinking, you know, being an observer of human behavior and really connecting, you know, human behavior, people, and, you know, the things that we make and, you know, the designs that we do. And how do you draw insight and really connect those two things instead of having them be these two disparate parts. So what is the acceptance rate then for the program? it's a very tough program to get. It's very tough. I don't want to give away the exact number per se, but I'd say that it's hard to get. Is that a fair answer? Do I have to give away an exact number? It's a little bit hard. We only take 15 people, so it is fairly selective. But I would say on top of that, we give portfolio reviews. I meet with almost every single candidate who comes in and asks me to review their portfolio. I talk personally with almost every single candidate who applies, who wants to talk. If someone doesn't get in, I meet with them and talk to them about why they haven't come in. So I'm fairly available to that end, and so I know almost every single person who has put in an application. So if that helps, that's sort of my answer. But it is extremely competitive.
It's a great answer. Here's a question from A Fruit in the chat room.
He's a big fan of the show. He's on all the he's here all the time.
A Fruit is on, he or she. Could be a she.
Could be.
And where did it just go? It was about, well, I'm not looking at it now, but it's the question is, do you do intern placement, cooperate with professional organizations, that kind of thing, or do you graduate them and turn them loose?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes to both of those things.
No, it couldn't be.
Yeah,
that would be that Spock thing where the computer blows up. so I'll rephrase it. Do you have some kind of intern placement or cooperation in place to help people get jobs after, or give them tips in that area, or?
Well, So internships happen between the first and second year, and then the job placement would happen after they graduate, right? So we do internship placement between first and second year during the summer, which is right now. And all of our students who sit over there, so I'm looking, they are all out in their internships right now. And so yes, we definitely help with that. There are some students who didn't want help with that, and I completely encourage them to construct their own internship. And I can tell you exactly where they got internships if people are interested in that. And so they're all doing that. And in terms of job placement, I am going to be involved as much as I'm going to kind of construct what will not be called a job fair, but will be sort of job fair-like. But I hate sort of those ideas, but something of that nature. But I think it's really important for graduate students in particular to be turned loose, because I don't want to actually coddle them and kind of hold their hand, because then that's unfair and that actually doesn't model the world that they will then live in. So I will do everything that I can to construct relationship building and kind of set up relationships beforehand. But then once they actually graduate, I will actually turn them loose, because otherwise it wouldn't be fair to them. They'll be broken, I think, as individuals. But certainly we will have a strong network and an alumni network that they can then use and use to their advantage, I would hope. But then it won't be part of my role to hold their hand, because I think that would be doing them a disservice.
Right. And I should add that in the 42nd semester, or whenever I come on, I think it's at the very end, but I'll be teaching something called selling design. But it's not really sales. It's about working with clients, working with teams, making the whole thing go, having some kind of ability to understand what the, understand the real world projects, work with real world clients or a real world boss in-house, or if you're like, you're making the iPad and Steve Jobs is your boss, how do you I don't really know how you deal with that one, but other than that one, that kind of thing. And yeah, so there'll be like months and months of brutal, just all night sessions on that. Oh, actually, it'll be. We also have a question from someone, and the question was about climate change and how media contributes to climate change. So how do you attune students to that, or do you? And I think what the actual, an interesting variant on that question might be is, are you teaching people to use computers and make stuff on computers, or are you teaching people to create interactions with mud or with clay at a museum or, whatever?
Right. That's an interesting variant on that question for sure. So, I think two things. One is we do have a class called Designing for Good, which is taught by a woman named Tamara Giltzoff, who is an independent consultant, but formerly was at a company called Ozo Lab and LiveWork in London, who leads the students in that way of thinking. And so it is very much intended to teach students about social responsibility. That said, to your question, Jeffrey, they don't actually design anything on the screen. So they are using paper to prototype their ideas and to present their ideas. And the kinds of projects that they were working on, the brief that they were designing for, allowed them to present work that was about social responsibility as it came to thinking about, changing the way that people think about food and neighborhoods, and it wasn't about the typical kind of design projects that we think about in any way. So when they thought about moving forward after that class, they took a class called Entrepreneurial Design, where they kind of put those ideas into practice, and they kind of had full rein and created a project on their own. They had to approach a nonprofit organization and come up with a project on their own to work with a nonprofit of their own devise. So we do teach them as much as we can in the time we have about social responsibility, and then it's up to them to kind of put that idea or those ideas into practice.
Sounds really good. Are there any call-ins today?
No, nobody's stepped up to the plate yet, Jeffrey.
Well,
is that by phone?
It is by phone. We have, if you can believe it.
Do people use the phone?
People do use the phone, and we do take calls on the show and a few other shows. Occasionally, people actually call in.
Wow.
But this time, so far, no calls. But we've had a lot of good questions in the chat. But we have been talking here for about 45 minutes. And Liz, Jeffrey, if you guys don't have any additional thoughts, maybe Liz, we can end with something, perhaps a message for the people who are thinking about this kind of program or who are wondering how can they find something like this, or does anything else like this exist maybe where they live? Are there any other partner programs? Are you guys working on reaching out or extending what you guys do to other locations, other universities?
That is a very good question. We are not currently looking at extending it to any other locations, but certainly there are other locations that offer interaction design. There is Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh that has an extremely strong interaction design program. There is the Austin Center for Design in Texas that has a brand new interaction design related program. Those are two that are very strong here in the United States. In Chicago, the IIT Institute of Design has an interaction design focus. They don't have a degree, but it is a strong interaction design focus that is north and in the center of the country. There is one that kind of focuses on design strategy. It's not interaction design per se, but in San Francisco at CCA, Nathan Shedroff runs an MBA in design strategy, and Nathan Shedroff is kind of one of the forefathers of interaction design. So here in the United States, those are the interaction design programs that I would name, other than ITP, which is not an interaction design degree per se, but people that are strong interaction designers have come out of that program here in New York. So to find out more about interaction design in general, sort of here at SVA, you can of course go to our own website at interactiondesign.sva.edu. But there is something called the Interaction Design Association, which is abbreviated at IXDA. And IXDA.org has all kinds of interaction design resources that from education to discussion groups to events, all kinds of things. And it is international. So that, I think, is a really great resource for people to find out all kinds of information.
Liz, as always, just, you have so much information. And share it so beautifully. Thank you so much. You're a wonderful guest, and really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to my co-host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and to our guest, Liz Danzico of Bobulate.com. Thanks also to our sponsor, MailChimp.com, for making this show possible. And thanks to you for listening. You can find out more about this and all of our other shows by visiting 5x5.tv. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating the show on iTunes. It's the best way to help new listeners find out about the show. This is Dan Benjamin for The Big Web Show. See you again next week.